Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Second hour is live. Welcome back to the program. And we have been waiting for this moment for a long time. We used to, when we were up in New York, have a chance to visit occasionally with Stephen A. Smith. But today we have a chance to talk about something that is very special, a brand new book coming out shortly called Straight Shooter, a memoir of second chances and first takes. It comes out in January, but it's available now. You'll hear all about it from our guest, Stephen A. Smith, and what a pleasure to say hello to you, Stephen A. Good afternoon.
It is my honor and privilege to talk to my brother. What's going on, Paul? How are you? I got to tell you, I was kind of surprised the last time I saw you on the air. You came at me, and I was like, what on earth is wrong with Paul today? Paul is getting on me about Mad Dog. He's getting on me about Alabama. He's getting on me about, I don't know what's going on. What's going on with Paul Feinbaum today?
Well, Stephen
A. But I'm all right.
You'd been gone for a while. You had surgery. You had some issues, and I just wanted you to feel comfortable. I wanted to welcome you back because nobody else will do that.
Well, you did it. Well, they tried, Paul. They tried, but you know, I mean, they can't succeed. They try to go up against me. They get beat down. I mean, they're not the mouth of the South, man. They're not you. I mean, they tried, but they did not succeed. I give them an A for effort, but obviously, that's all they're going to get.
Well, I want to get right to it because when I heard about this the other day that you had a book coming out, I mean, I stood up and saluted because I know what a great writer you are because I remember you when you were only a writer. And I just wanted you to take the audience through this decision to tell all about yourself and what it's been like putting it together.
I've never, ever, ever had a desire to write a book. That's not something that I was remotely interested in, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, anything like that. Around 10 years ago or so, when I got back to ESPN, a lot of people were clamoring for me to write a book. And obviously, when you read books, the only book that I was ever interested in writing was a memoir. You know, I wasn't interested in writing somebody else's story. I was going to write my own, or, you know, maybe murder mysteries and stuff like that down the line. Like John Grisham and, you know, others and Patterson, James Patterson and others. But in terms of nonfiction, the only thing that I was ever interested in writing was my own book, my own memoir. And I remember Simon & Schuster had come to me years earlier, along with various other publications. And I had gone home and I had told my mother, who passed away in 2017, as you well know. And my mother said to me, just promise me one thing. You will not write a book until I pass away. And I said to her at the time, why would you say that? And, you know, even by this time she had, you know, discovered that she had cancer. You know, I was confident that she would beat it at the time, but she had made me promise. And I said, why would you say that? She said, because I know you. She said, when you write this book, you're going to tell a lot about yourself. And you're going to tell the truth. And it's not a truth that I want to be alive when other people are reading this. She says, I don't mind you telling the story. I understand it's something that you have to tell because it's your story and your profile is growing and we get all of that. She said, but the kind of things that you're going to reveal, she said, I don't blame you for it. I'm not going to stop you. I'm not going to knock you for it. I just don't want to be alive when you do it. And so I waited all of those years, and she passed away in 2017, and I waited and I waited and I waited. And then finally, you know, my friends, my family, my loved ones, they said, okay, it's time. go ahead and do it. And then I did it.
Stephen A., having done it myself, writing about a mother is incredibly difficult, and I know it was. But how did you process it, and how did you do it?
It was a big time struggle. The book isn't just about her; it's about me. It's about my life. It's about my relationship or lack thereof with my father. It's about my father's relationship with my mother and my four sisters, along with myself. It's about my career, not just at ESPN, but at the New York Daily News, at the Philadelphia Inquirer, at Fox Sports. Some of the trials and tribulations that I endured, but specifically to answer your question as it pertained to my mother, I wrote this book myself. Of course, you have editors who look at it, and I certainly had one, but I wrote the book myself because it was my memoir. I have a journalistic background, and I just could not leave that to somebody else to write it and to put it in their words instead of my own. And I would tell you that I wrote it about 90,000 words. I didn't know how much, but they told me it was about 90,000 words. They had to cut some of it, to be quite honest with you. And, you know, I did it inside of 6 months. Literally 4 months was on my mother because it was so hard to revisit some of the things that we had to endure, that she specifically had to endure, that I would write a little bit and stop, thinking I would come back the next day and I wouldn't come back for another week. And then I'd write again and then I wouldn't come back for another week. Then I'd write again and I wouldn't come back for 2 weeks. Everything else I shot right through, chapter for chapter for chapter. But when it came to her and things that directly involved her, it brought back so many poignant memories that it was very, very difficult for me to just get through it. And so that took me a very, very long time. To finally say all the things that I want to say, because recall kicks in, Paul, as you well know. And, you know, you start writing things and it was things you didn't even think about. And as you're sitting down and you're figuratively putting pen to paper because we're writing on a laptop or whatever, I'm sitting there like, yeah, and this happened. And then, oh, my God, this happened. And I remember this happened and this happened and this happened. And this is stuff that I remembered when I was 8 years old, 10 years old, 12, 15, 17, and it was some very, very poignant memories, some that were very, very hard to revisit. And one of the things that I made sure to do was show it to my sisters. My sister, my older sister, Linda, Arlen, Abigail, Carmen, I showed it to them, and they didn't speak to me for 2 weeks. And finally, when I confronted them, I said, why? You know, they weren't angry at me. They just said it hurt so much that it kind of depressed them to have to revisit things that they had long put in a box and just let fade away. And this kind of forced them to revisit some of the memories that most people in our lives would rather forget.
With Stephen A. Smith talking about his memoirs, which are available now, but out to actually get your hands on in a couple of months, and we'll tell you more about that in a minute. But Stephen A., as you're doing this, you know, cathartic is a word we throw around, but you're learning a lot more about your life back then. But how surprising was it to really go back in time and see how what you're doing now, as one of the most successful personalities in the world, came to be?
Well, it's very shocking. I certainly never anticipated all of this. I think one of the things that makes me smile most, it's not that I'm successful, Paul. It's what I'm successful in. I'm a successful journalist. I'm a successful commentator and pundit. But it all started off with print journalism. And so to be a journalist, to have to gather facts, comprehend what you're reading, decipher them not for yourself, but then ultimately to disseminate to the masses. Paul, that was the reason I got left back in the fourth grade. I had a first grade reader level. I had undiagnosed dyslexia. I didn't know. And so when you look at it from that perspective and to think that not only I excelled, it would be one thing if I made a name for myself and I was an athlete or I was an artist or something like that. That would have been great, and that would have been very, very beneficial for myself, my family, et cetera, et cetera. But to excel at the very thing that was literally a disability for me in elementary school is something that I just don't know how to put into words. I know that it made my mother proud. My mother, to her dying day, couldn't even, she paid no attention to sports. She used to say EPSN, whatever that channel is. I don't know. That's what she used to say with a West Indian accent. She used to say EPSN. She didn't know it was ESPN because she just did not, watch sports. But she knew that her baby boy was on TV and was doing things that they said that I wouldn't be able to do. And so that was something that made her incredibly, incredibly proud. And it made me proud to make her proud.
We're chatting with Stephen A. Smith. And Stephen A., as you obviously, I haven't read it yet, but I know enough about you to understand what you were swimming through to get all this out. When you pivoted from that, your career is a book in and of itself, your successes and your failures.
Yeah. Well, no question about it. And that's something that I talk about in the book as well. And I think the thing about it is I focused on accountability. You know, it's real easy to point the finger at everybody else, but I made sure to point the finger at myself primarily to talk about the things that I did and the things that I should not have done and the things that nearly cost me, you know, how I rose, then fell even deeper into abyss, wondering whether I'd ever be able to get up, and then ultimately rising above the ashes and propelling myself to the heights that I propelled myself to. When I was ultimately let go by ESPN in 2009, I was a new father. My daughter Samantha was just born. And to be an African American, to understand the trials and tribulations and the challenges that you're going to face, that's one thing in and of itself that can appear to be very daunting. But to ultimately end up unemployed and have somebody else, another human being that you're responsible for other than yourself, then that became incredibly, incredibly scary. And so when you look at things from that standpoint and you're forced to have to think about somebody other than yourself, ultimately you can go one or two ways in an effort to desperately, you know, resurrect yourself or take care of your responsibilities. You can go the right way or you can go the wrong way. You can fall prey to some of the things that are transpiring or that take place around you. And through the grace of God and a phenomenal mom and a great, you know, base in terms of my sisters, my friends and support base, I was able to get out of that abyss and ultimately to climb from it. But I talk about how. I talk about some of the do's and don'ts. I talk about some of the challenges that I faced. I highlight some of the obstacles that literally stood in my way, most of which were self-inflicted, some that were not. And I talk about all of those things. And so, you know, to revisit that and to see that for what it is, I think this book is incredibly motivational because there's a lot of people out there that find, you know, that will discover there's a whole bunch of reasons that you can give up. There's a whole bunch of reasons and situations and scenarios that can find you feeling incredibly hopeless. But there's always hope as long as there's breath in your body. And there's always a second chance and a chance after that. You just got to keep grinding, keep scratching, keep clawing and keep pushing and pray a lot as well, because that certainly never hurts. But you got to be about the business of doing it, not just talking about it and not just praying about it. God helps those who help themselves. And so that's the kind of message that I tried to send in this book, chapter and verse, talking about my life.
We're chatting with Stephen A. Smith, his book out shortly, available now online, and we are going to take a short break. A few more minutes with Stephen A. Smith right here.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Stephen A., thank you for making a little more time with us. I think a lot of people that I'm hearing from in real time are surprised when they hear you talk about this. People that know you aren't. But how do you deal with the parodies, whether it's Saturday Night Live or anywhere else in the universe of you, the screaming A? I mean, there's so much out there about you that's not true. And I know you can laugh at some of it, but it's hard to laugh at all of it.
Well, I do laugh at some of it because if it's funny, it's funny. So I got to give credit where credit is due. You know, when you sit in a hot seat like First Take and you sit in judgment of people's actions, I pride myself in sitting in judgment of what they do, not who they are. But that doesn't mean it's always interpreted by that way. And so when people decide to respond and go tit for tat, whether directly or indirectly, or whether through other avenues, other channels, and you find yourself being under that microscope, I pride myself in showing level of adulthood, of composure, and intestinal fortitude that they may not be willing to show themselves. And so for me, when they attack me, that's cool. The lies come every day. Everybody's always lying on me about something, and that's fine. I understand. It depends on what the lies are on a case-by-case basis. But there are some times where I've made my own mistakes, and you have to own that. You can't call other people accountable and then run and shy away from accountability yourself. My mother was big on that. I tell a story in the book, for example, when my mother brought me breakfast, and it was with a tray of food. The food was on a tray, and it was a little handheld mirror in there. And I was like, "What is this for?" She said, "That's for when you're ready to look at yourself." It's real easy to point the finger at other people. What about you? What you do? And my mother was, what did you do? And my mother was big on that. And so I always remember that. And I always hold on to stuff like that. But people coming at you, yeah, the lies are difficult. You know, especially when it's intentional. And it's harshly intentional. But you got to be able to take it. You really, really do. And as for when people are attacking me all the time or what have you, it's not about whether or not it's easy or not. It's about whether or not I can take it. And I can tell you right now, I was built for it. I can damn sure take it because we all know I can dish it out.
We do know that. Stephen A., I know you're also, you talk about some other personal things. It's known, but it's not that well known. You nearly died of COVID. I hate to ask you a cliche. What was that like, nearly dying?
But it was a nightmare.
I bet.
Yeah, it was hallucinating, cold sweats, 102.7 degree fever, being in the hospital New Year's Eve, and them telling you, you know what, we're going to try this steroid and this antibiotic. If it doesn't work, we're going to have to call your family. I mean, it was some scary stuff. Make no mistake about it. And I think the thing that drove me absolutely nuts, that I was in disbelief. I was more annoyed and ticked off and in disbelief than I was scared at that immediate moment, because I couldn't believe this was happening to me. And the reason why is because, you know, I don't smoke. I'm a casual drinker at best, maybe a couple of Hennessy and Cokes a week. I never did drugs or anything like that. And my sister, God bless her, she hates when I tell her this, but it's the truth. My sister smokes every day. And she got COVID on a Friday, and she was fine on a Monday. I mean, literally. And so it kind of blows me away how indiscriminate this appears to be, how unpredictable it is. And it's a lot of stuff. But I've got all of that in the book, along with various other things pertaining to it, like, you know, the Trump administration and some of the things that he had to say about all of that, my reaction to stuff like that. That's a whole bunch of stuff in the book. Make no mistake.
You mentioned the president, and you obviously know him. I mean, there's hardly anybody in the mass media that you don't know. And you have to balance it all. You can't be taken in by someone trying to influence you or peddle you. How do you deal with that part of your life being so public? You can't walk down the street in New York without security. I mean, these things just come with the territory, but they're also there's a lot of things infringed upon you as well.
No question, but in the same breath, I knew that it came with the job once your popularity elevates. I didn't ask for this. I didn't anticipate it. But once it was happening, I didn't run from it. And so you got to accept accountability for your role in all of that. 99% of the time, black, white, Latino, Asian, doesn't matter. I get nothing but love. That 1% of the time screeches the loudest, of course, as is the case with anything negative in this day and age. But that's the kind of stuff that goes on. And then you have to accept it and you have to take what comes with it. But you also have to hold your ground in terms of making sure to let people know you're not castrating, castigating, character assassinating someone. You're talking about what they do as opposed to who they are. You know, I give you a perfect example, a taste of it when I talk about the former president. A lot of people abhor his policies and stuff like that. I never get into all of that. The prism of history will tell us who's right and who's wrong, whose policies were more favorable for the American people or who wasn't or whatever. But I have relationships with guys like Sean Hannity, Mark Levin, and others. I know these people, you know, and so, you know, when I would say stuff like that and you know, especially in the case of a Sean Hannity, he would try to undress me. I would tell him, I said, hey, let me tell you something, man. I said, you don't hear me talking about politics, but I will tell you this. When you're a politician, for example, particularly somebody in the White House, statesmanship matters. How you conduct yourself, how you speak, how you carry yourself, the level of decorum and what have you set forth, it matters because it influences the tenor and potentially the culture of so many people. And you have to embrace that as a responsibility overseeing all of America to assist in bringing us together, even when our opinions may be apart. You have to prioritize that. And if you are any politician that doesn't prioritize doing that, then you're not an asset to America. You're a liability because you're thinking about yourself and your mood swings and all of these other things. And you're not thinking about the bigger picture, which is the importance of galvanizing us all to put America first and to be about America first. And so when you explain stuff like that, and you have that kind of mentality, remember, that's the kind of stuff that trickles down to CEOs, to executives, even the on-air talent such as myself. I can go out in the street and choose to act any old way that I want to. But guess what? I don't need ESPN to hold me to a standard. I have my own standard that was instilled in me by my mother. And there's certain things that you do and you just don't do because it's wrong. It's not the right thing to do. And I'm not perfect, but I certainly strive to be as good and as decent as I possibly can while doing my job. And sometimes that brings unwanted attention. Sometimes that brings heat, but you got to be able to take it when you're in a position to influence the lives of so many because of the platform that I have. I take it as a badge of honor and a responsibility, and I embrace it.
Stephen A., America had an actor become president for 2 terms. We had a reality talk show host become president. Would you consider running for president?
If I thought I could win, yes. Yeah. If I thought that I could rally, I mean, I would have told you hell no, no way in hell years ago. You know, I was a father out of wedlock. Obviously, when you think about the standards that were once held in the White House, I'm pretty damn good, but I'm not perfect. And those imperfections obviously would be highlighted when 350 plus American citizens are relying on you to institute and implement policy that would affect their lives. So I would told you once upon a time, hell no. But when I see some of the things that has transpired, I can honestly tell you, even though that answer would still be no, if people came to me and enough people came to me and said to me, Stephen A., you have a legitimate shot to win the presidency of the United States of America, I would strongly, strongly consider running because I know this much. I know 2 things would happen. I would know how to act, number one, and number two, I would think about America. Of course, I'm a black man, so I would think about the black community. But I have always prided myself in stating, I'm not just about black appeal. I'm about mass appeal. And everybody in America would matter. And whatever it took to make this country better is what I would do from the bottom of my heart. I have no desire to ever be a politician, to ever run. But I would tell you, I've lost so much respect for the nonsense that I see taking place on Capitol Hill that if somebody said to me, Stephen A., you could win this thing, yes, I would run for the presidency of the United States of America.
this book just may be the beginning. Straight Shooter is the name. You can go to
Why are you laughing, Paul? Why are you laughing?
Book.com.
Why are you laughing at me,
and we
Paul?
Just may have had a, we just may be talking to the next president of the United States right here.
Steve, I don't think so.
I've always wanted to have dinner at the White House, Stephen. Hey, here it is.
That's right. You'd be one of my first invites. You know you're my brother. You know I'd have you there. You know that. As long as you promised me you wouldn't speak against Alabama. As long as you didn't do that, we're good. Don't speak against my man. Don't get me wrong. I love Kirby Smart. I respect him. I love the job he's done at Georgia. He's a phenomenal coach. And I had the pleasure of hanging out with him for a little bit in Vegas. But Nick Saban is Nick Saban. That's my brother, man. Alabama all day, every day. And they're going to win. They should have won it if they didn't have injuries in the national championship game and the SEC title game, okay? They should have won it last year, and they will make up for it. Bryce Young and the crew will win the national championship this year, and they will do so by going undefeated. And to Jimbo Fisher, who I also love. I love Jimbo Fisher. My condolences to you, my brother. Talked a lot of junk to Nick Saban and all of that stuff. Now, I don't blame him. You had a right to be upset because he shouldn't have named your name. But, boy, you're going to pay for that when you go up, when you come to Tuscaloosa. It's going to be a problem. I'm just letting you know that. It's going to be a problem for Texas A&M. I'm just telling y'all in advance.
Stephen A., thank you so much. This was a pleasure for all of us. And we will see you at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue in a couple of weeks.
Thank you so much, Paul. Appreciate you, man. Thank you, buddy.
What a pleasure. Stephen A. Smith. Talking about a book, but I'm pretty sure he just announced he's running for president. But we'll figure that one out when we come back. And when also in the next couple of minutes, we have something else pretty special for you. We're going to get into one of the crazes in the country right now, wrestling, the SEC Battle Royale, coming up next.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Okay, we're back here on Politics Today with Stephen A. Smith. Wow. I mean, I knew Stephen A. would tell a phenomenal story about his family. I did not expect him to announce he was running for president of the United States here today.
You heard it here first?
But he did. And good for him. Ashley is up next in Tennessee. Hello, Ashley. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hey there.
I just wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed Stephen A. And if he runs for president, probably a bunch of us would vote for him. I really enjoy him. He seems like he always knows what he's talking about.
Well, I have said this before, and I've drawn the wrath of some people. And I've had the fortune, I say, to get to know him very well. And I've had dinner with him, lunch with him. I've been around him a lot. And he is not the person you see on television. He's a very good, decent person. And I think you heard why He's the ultimate showman, though. Nobody's ever been a better showman on television. But he has fun with it, and that's the important thing. Hey, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Derek is up next. Hello, Derek. Go right ahead.
What's going on, Governor Firebaugh?
I think if Stephen A. runs, I'll have to. I can't sit by idly. I've got to run for something.
Hey, Paul, Stephen will do probably the same numbers Kanye West did when he was running for president. But honestly, you got a long shot for the state of Alabama, Paul.
You know, I saw some politicians last night at this event, and one thing about Alabama, once you get in, you're good for the most part. But it's a long time job.
Well, Paul, you got my vote, and I just want to tell you I truly appreciate how you do bring black and white people together, and I appreciate that, you know, with your call and your show every day. And just keep doing what you're doing, Paul. And I can't wait, you know, for Governor Firebaugh to run in 2024.
Well, you got it. Hey, thank you very much, Eric. I appreciate you saying that. That means a lot to all of us here. Let's continue with more phone calls. I'm all choked up now that Stephen A. is running for president. Scott is calling from California. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
We are doing great. Thank you very much.
You know, you better tell Stephen A., if he runs for president, he's probably going to have to finish up the Gerber baby food that's going to be left over.
I'll tell him.
Hey, Nate, hey, Paul, what was the last time you was in Knoxville, Tennessee, living there?
Oh, it's been forever. I only lived
69,
in...
69, 70, 71?
79.
Okay, 79. Well, then, you know what I'm about to... I went. My first game was in the late '60s as a witness, and the end zone towards the campus was bleachers. Do you remember that?
Yeah, no, I remember my first year at school. You could stand up on the hill where Ayers Hall is and look into the Smoky Mountains across Neyland Stadium. You cannot do that anymore.
I never saw what you saw, though.
No, I've never seen the bleachers.
Well, I asked the person that I was with, you know, I was only maybe 8, 9 years old, and he told me that I guess a lady had donated a lot of money to the university and the athletic department, and the only thing is they could not fill in the bleachers, you know, like the rest of the stadium. You ever heard such?
Yeah, I really haven't. Anyway, hey, Scott, I really don't remember. Hey, thank you for the call, though. I appreciate it. Let's continue. Curtis is up next in Tennessee. Hello, Curtis.
Hey, Paul, I had to call back. I really wanted to let you know I enjoyed the interview with Stephen A.
Thank you.
And said this. I like Stephen A., but he's crazy when he's talking about Alabama going undefeated. All right, Paul, love you. You have a good day.
Thank you very much. Let's check in with Wyatt in Florida. Hey, Wyatt, go right ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering to know, Paul, is how do you see Florida's first game going, you know, with the defense coming back stronger with Ventrell Miller? And then also, how do you see Billy Napier's career at Florida going?
Well, I will tell you, those are all very difficult questions to answer, Wyatt. Right now, I haven't made up my mind on the Florida-Georgia game. The Florida-Utah game. Maybe a slight lean toward Utah, but I'd like to revisit. And I don't think that game is going to really have a big impact on Billy Napier's career. I think he will be successful. He has a couple of things going for him right now that are unique. He's got facilities for the first time. A lot of mistakes have been made in Gatorland, and Billy Napier, I think, is taking advantage of it. I think he will have a tremendous impact on recruiting, and recruiting is where he is going to make his living. Thanks for the call. We're heading to a break. We had Stephen A. on. We have more guests to come, and we are coming right back.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Bama Bob in Florida. Hello, Bama Bob.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
Very well, thank you.
I want to let you know Stephen A's got my vote. And do you agree with Stephen A as far as the Alabama undefeated season, and who do you think is going to have to step up other than the usual names as leadership?
Well, I tend to agree with him, and I'm a little more upbeat today than I was even yesterday. Spending the night in Birmingham last night, being around a lot of Alabama people at this event, people that were at practice the other day, there's a high optimism there, and I think sometimes you can hear that, but I'm hearing a specific improvement, and I did speak to some people that are involved with the university in a significant fashion at this gathering yesterday, and this is not just hype, this is legit. They really the word is Saban is about as upbeat on this team as he's been on any team in a number of years. Hey, thank you very, very much for the call. Pat is up next. Hey, Pat.
Hey, Paul. I just had to call back and say, wow, the last 30 minutes I've spent listening to Stephen A. Smith, that was fantastic. And I remember chatting with you last week, and you said the reason that you liked him so much was the story about him as a human being, and that really came through in the interview. And I really do want to read his book, and unfortunately, I have some vision issues, and I have to listen to a book on Audible.
Yeah, well, I know for a fact he's doing an audiobook, and if you were ever going to listen to an audiobook, Stephen A. would be the one to listen to.
Especially if he did the audio.
Oh, he will. I mean, you don't let some boring, generic guy from Des Moines do Stephen A. Smith's audio version.
Well, I'm going to listen to it. I really am. Hey, thanks for letting me call back in, but that was fantastic.
Thank you very much. No, I mean, I was with him. I was on a show the other day, and he talked about coming in studio at some point or me being up there. And then we talked over the weekend, and we felt, let's just go ahead and do it before we get too deep into the season. Hey, thank you. Appreciate it very, very much. Let's talk to Denver next in Arkansas. Hey, Denver.
Hey, how's it going?
We are doing great.
I wanted to ask you about what you think Arkansas is going to do this year, see if they'll do better, if they might have a chance to upset Alabama.
Yeah, I think Alabama's vulnerable a couple of times this year, and it's primarily a schedule setup. And when you look at it, there are two or three traps where they're playing a lot of really tough games in a row. I think sometimes it depends on when the game is. I mean, look at Arkansas and Alabama. It's right after Texas A&M. Excuse me, it's right after Alabama's playing right before Texas A&M. For Alabama, the game is before A&M in Texas, and for Arkansas, it's the week after A&M in Texas. So it's a very weird part of the schedule, but I'd have to wait and see, take a look at this Alabama team first, but I really like Arkansas this year. John is in Indiana. Hello, John.
Hi, Paul. Hey, Paul, since you guys have been talking about Kentucky basketball for the last week or so, they got, under Adolph Rupp, they got some unbelievable streak, I think, of 137 in a row. Was that conference games, non-conference games, or games in Memorial Coliseum? But I thought I read one time where they won 137 games in a row. Which streak was that?
Yeah, I don't think it was 130. There's no way it was consecutive because I think UCLA had the longest streak on that. I believe it was in the 50s or 60s. It may have been home, or I'll have to double check. I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head, but it's certainly something that we can find. Miss Faye is in Virginia. Hello, Miss Faye.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, Miss Faye, we're doing great.
Good. I really enjoyed that interview with Stephen Smith. I really enjoyed that. And I tell you right now, I think he'd beat the hell out of people in Washington, D.C. right now if he was in at the White House.
You know, I think some of part of him was serious, but I will say this about politics, Miss Faye.
Uh-huh.
Celebrity has proven to be a critical factor, and it's one thing to be a celebrity.
Yes,
and we saw this with Donald Trump. I mean, he was a television aficionado. Stephen A. Smith blows everybody else away. And
yes, right.
I mean, I have been with Stephen A. in Manhattan, and you can walk down the street and people from all walks of life gather around him, and that is unique. You can't. I mean, you look at the crowd that ran the last time. There was nobody in the Democratic primary who did that. And in the previous time, the only person that was in the Republican primary that galvanized excitement was the guy who won. We'll take a short break. Coming right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.